Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve. Thank you to everyone listening live on UK Health Radio, and thank you to anyone who's listening on demand on any of the podcast platforms. So that would be the podcast channels of choice, but the main ones, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. It's great to have you with us. We've got downloads now in 50 countries every month, which always blows us away. So thank you very much. Also, thank you if you're watching this on YouTube or if you're watching any of the clips on my Instagram channel, which is at Steve Roost. So if you love our content, head there, follow, like, share. We really appreciate the engagement. So last week's show was with Devika Wood, the CEO of Brain Plus. And she was such an incredible person, such an inspiration. If you want a kind of really uplifting show without kind of glossing over the reality of being a founder and the difficulties of the startup journey, then I can completely recommend it. There was so much discussion and debate, particularly around the area of menopause and dementia. So Brain Plus is a dementia platform that focuses on cognitive stimulation therapy, CST. So again, if dementia and dementia treatments is your bag, then I can recommend the last episode of the Health Tech Hour with Devika Wood. On to today's show. This week, we have Wendy Powell on the show, who is the founder of the Mutu System, M-U-T-U, and the leader, global leader in digital pelvic floor health solutions, which has been validated clinically and is at use widely in the NHS and in the US. Now, this is a totally new area for the show. We've not dealt with the pelvic floor on the Health Tech Hour as yet, but it is an issue, I suspect, that affects billions of women worldwide. And so let's get into it. So, Wendy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm very well.
Sorry for the sound issues at the beginning of the show. Apologies. But look, why don't we start off with a little bit of an explanation around the problem? So we're a broad church, so I suspect that there are lots of people listening who know exactly what the problem is. But there's probably a lot of people that don't. So why don't we kick off there? Well, what is this problem around pelvic floor?
Absolutely. Well, I'm delighted to be bringing pelvic floor health to the channel for the first time. What we're talking about with pelvic health is women's health. It's below the belt, essentially, Steve. What we're talking about is issues, symptoms that might include urinary incontinence, often just referred to as bladder leaks or, sort of small leaks. We're talking about pelvic organ prolapse symptoms, which can vary from being quite minor and asymptomatic through to being a serious problem impeding a woman's ability to get through her day. We're talking about back pain, lower back pain, and also core muscle issues. So these might include, for example, abdominal separation or diastasis recti, which is very common, happens sort of during pregnancy and after, where the rectus abdominis, the six-pack muscle, if you like, at the front kind of parts, and that leads to instability and a lack of core strength, also related to back pain. So we're talking about all of these issues which affect a woman's core and pelvic floor. Postnatally, definitely an issue, but also through pregnancy, into perimenopause and menopause. So really, pelvic health is something that needs to be addressed and thought about for women right through their journey from puberty, fertility, pregnancy, all the way through.
And what are the statistics or your direct experience of the prevalence of pelvic health issues in women, with women?
In terms of, if we take urinary incontinence, bladder leaks, one third of women over 35 will have some level of bladder leaks. It is reported that 50%, half of women who have ever given birth, will have some level of pelvic organ prolapse. So these are incredibly common issues. They're very, very prevalent. The issue is that obviously the implications that they have, and we can come on to that, not just physically, but these are issues that are intimate and affect a woman's whole life and ability to get through her day with any level of confidence and comfort. But they're happening right through that process. So they're affecting ability to turn up, to be present, whether that be at work, at home, in any sort of situation. They can affect intimacy as well. That can be uncomfortable or even painful. So yeah, it's affecting women right through their life stages, and across all aspects of their life. And it's very, very prevalent. Unfortunately, it's often also thought of as being normal or inevitable, especially after having children. So for example, a lot of moms will joke about, oh, that they can't sneeze or laugh or dance or, heaven forbid, go on a trampoline because they're worried they'll wet themselves. So very, very common, and sadly often thought of as normal and inevitable as well.
Yeah, I saw on the on your website when we were doing our show research that you have some sort of like, you know, these kind of not myth busting things, but it's sort of, you know, it's not inevitable that these things happen, and it doesn't, this doesn't have to, this shouldn't be like just the way it is. I can't remember what phrase you've got on there off the top of my head, but it was something along those lines, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, women will report that even their GP will kind of pass off a lot of these issues as, well, you had a baby, or that's just what happens. So yeah, it is very, it's very accepted as being part of the norm. And I think that through media and social media and things, a lot of these issues are maybe talked about more. So there's a little bit more openness and validation of women, you're not alone, which is good. But it, for me, that there's a very essential next stage to that, which is like, okay, great, you're not alone, validate this is a very common problem, but there is something you can do about this. You don't have to live with it.
And how much of these problems are associated with pregnancy versus not pregnancy? Like, you know, some women have children, some women don't. What's the difference there with how the pelvic health is affected?
So in terms of prevalence of, let's take urinary incontinence, bladder leaks on some level, the highest risk group is going to be, for example, a woman who has had a baby, who gave birth vaginally, and even more so if there was some form of intervention in that birth, so forceps, ventouse, etc. So if there were complications.
Okay.
So if there is it literal physical damage to the pelvic floor during the birthing process, then absolutely that's going to increase a risk. But there's also further risks later in life. So for example, through perimenopause and into menopause, where declining estrogen will also often contribute to less bladder control, and issues around pelvic health, dryness, etc.
How does an estrogen drop contribute to loss of bladder control? That's kind of interesting. Does it affect like
Yeah.
muscle? How does that work?
So the drop in estrogen affects the elasticity and moisture and function around the vaginal walls and the whole pelvic area. So a lot of women do find that even if bladder leaks or incontinence wasn't an issue before, it may start to manifest in those later years. So there are many points in a woman's life when this may happen. Also, it can be cyclical. There might be different stages of a woman's cycle when issues, for example, around prolapse will feel much more symptomatic maybe at certain times of the month. And also, it's not always linear. So what we often hear is, maybe somebody, I mean, COVID was a great example, really, in terms of a lot of coughing. So a lot of coughing, forceful
Right.
coughing, and chest infection, anything like that that puts a lot of pressure on the pelvic floor can make issues work or worse or manifest them for the first time. So there are lifting something heavy, hernia type risks. All of these things can contribute to pelvic floor symptoms and issues sort of coming up when maybe they weren't there before.
And how, what was your journey into this area? You know, give us that story. When did you start to sort of care passionately enough about this to go and start your business in this area?
Sure. So I invented Mutu, as it were. My babies are 18 and 19 now, and that's basically how old Mutu is. So when I was pregnant with my first, I was a personal trainer, and I was already a specialist certified in pre and postnatal training. So I had all the pieces of paper and certificates saying that I knew all about training pregnant and postnatal women. I then had I had great pregnancies, but very traumatic births with massive postpartum hemorrhage and a lot of intervention. And so my recovery post birth, in both cases actually, was there was a lot of recovery needed, both physical but also very much in that emotional psychological space that I know is very relatable to a lot of women who have had babies, which is that feeling mentally and emotionally of your body having let you down in some way. This was supposed to be this incredibly natural, intuitive process that often isn't. And so it was sort of post those experiences and my recovery where, and I'd already been training postnatal women for some years at that point, and so now I was knowing for myself that there are all these symptoms, these issues, these problems that women are having with their bodies post baby, which my world at the time, fitness, didn't know anything about because the training that I'd done wasn't sufficient. The media, your GP, so many different sources are saying, hey, that's just what happens. That's normal. You know, you had a baby, love, deal with it. And so it was around that time that I was like, well, somebody must know these answers. So I then started, I segued my study away from just the mainstream fitness world that I was in at that time. And I started working with biomechanists and sex therapists and midwives and most fundamentally women's health physiotherapists, to really understand what is going on in there. Why are so many women dealing with these issues, and why haven't we got better solutions for it? So it was from that Mutti was born.
And at what point did you sort of, did it grow organically, or at what point did it become, less of a hobby, more of a business? Like how, what was that, how was that kind of origin story?
Entirely in a non-planned way, Steve. If there's any allusion to a business plan, there wasn't one. So really what I did was what I did was I did my research, and obviously I was working with hundreds of women and since then tens of thousands of women, but I developed some exercises. I filmed myself doing them and I sent them. There was no Instagram then, it was all Twitter. So I then sent my little videos to women's health physiotherapists here in the UK, in the States, in Australia, and I said, is this safe? Does this work? Would you give this to your patients? How would you change it? And that's been a theme of Mutu since the very start, which is that it's been very collaborative in terms of the clinicians and medical professionals that we work with, to always be making what is in there not only evidence-based but actually followable for women. So we work with a lot of feedback there as well. So I put stuff online and then I Googled, how do you make a website? How do you put a video online? How do you make people pay to access the video? Google was my teacher for a few years.
And we'll go back a step as well. Like when you first started, what was this? I guess maybe it is still the standard of care in some places. Like what are we, what can women right now, or back when you sort of started, what was the sort of normal that they could be expecting from the healthcare service, either I guess the maternity unit or midwife or GP, or I'm not sure what the other touch points might be.
So in terms of pathway, very much depends on where you are. So if we take the UK, for example, initially, as you say, one would expect that maybe it would be a midwifery maternity team that might introduce this, but to be honest, it's not really touched upon in those early stages. That's all about literal sort of a more acute recovery, breastfeeding, just getting home, all of that kind of thing. There's a 6-week check that every woman in this country goes to with her GP. That tends to be a fairly checkbox exercise, which is, perfectly valid, but a lot of those checkboxes are baby related rather than mum related.
Yeah, I would imagine. And not all of those GP, does it, is it a special pediatric GP, or it could just be your family,
Just
it could be
GP.
an just a GP.
Yeah, it's just a GP. So every woman in the UK is usually assigned a midwife in some form, depending on where she's giving birth, and she will of course have a GP, and there is a 6-week check. Now, what we hear so often, sadly, from women across the spectrum, is that 6-week check is somewhat disappointing, in the sense that, that sort of there's a few check boxes that have to be done with regards to baby's health, obviously, and immediate concerns around mom, especially around mental health, for example. But pelvic floor health is not really touched upon at all in most cases, and if it is, it's fairly cursory. If she raises an issue or says, I think there's a problem, I'd like to see someone, then the ideal pathway is that she is then referred to an NHS women's health physiotherapist. I say ideal because that often doesn't happen, and many GPs that we've worked with don't even know that that pathway even exists or have access to that, and so they might be sending straight to a surgical option or to
Oh,
nothing at
wow.
all, or
So at
to
6 weeks,
here's a leaflet.
you can get referred straight into surgery.
It's
Wow.
highly unlikely that's going to
Okay.
happen, but to be honest, it's that's usually if these issues are being presented further down the line. To
Okay.
be honest, that 6 week check, it's not really going to touch on it. Then she's got a health visitor that she'll see regularly. Again,
I would imagine
very
that's a bit of a
baby
postcode
related.
lottery. Is that a bit of a postcode lottery
Very
as
much
well?
so. Very much so. In short, Steve, the answer to your question is that there isn't really one, and that the best and the most likely scenario is that she may have received a leaflet, maybe from the health visitor or from the GP about pelvic floor exercises, do your Kegels, something like that. It's highly unlikely to be raised. And what also tends to happen is that certainly in those early postnatal stages, she is unlikely to present it as a problem because everything's changed anyway. So it's
Yeah.
usually not until some months down the line where it's like, okay, the rest of me is feeling relatively normal now. What the heck with what's going on down there? And
Yeah.
then she may present, but as I say, many don't.
Okay. And you mentioned that was the UK. Is it different in other countries or?
It's great. Yes, there are some European countries, for example, France, Spain, I believe, where women's health physiotherapy is part of the national health pathway. So every woman that gives birth is absolutely signposted straight into women's health physiotherapy. So there is better care there. And then we do a lot of work in the States where I'm afraid it's even less than we get,
So
unless you
it's
pay for
less. So
private.
what? How kind of brutal is it in the US?
Well, it's kind of non-existent, sadly. I mean, in terms of, sort of pelvic floor and core health post baby, unless something is specifically presented, she is likely to be handed a leaflet, if anything.
Wow.
So yeah,
So is
it's
it? Does
not
that mean
standard pathway.
it's not covered under insurance codes or whatever the system is there?
Some women's health physiotherapy is, depends on your insurer. So yes, some women's health physiotherapy might be covered, but usually there would have to be a very specific diagnosis in that case,
Okay.
which we may not have gotten to.
Right. Okay, well, that's a good place for us to pause. And then after our first commercial break, which is right now, we'll come back and I'd love to learn about more about the Mutu system and how you kind of organically developed it. And I know that you've got clinical evidence and obviously you work with the NHS and this type of stuff. So we'll dig into the full Mutu system after this short break. We'll be right back with my guest today, Wendy Powell, CEO and founder of the Mutu system.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333 336 1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the second part of today's show, where for the first time on the Health Tech Hour, we're talking about women's pelvic floor through and improving it using digital solutions. Right. So before we kind of set up how the Mutu system, more importantly, why the sheer scale of the issue, and it seems like a sort of anywhere between sort of apathy and carelessness in the system. I don't know if that's a fair assessment around these issues. Would you agree, or kind of how would you sort of assess it?
It's not an unfair assessment for sure, but sadly, pelvic health in this scenario we're talking about is very much a women's health area, and women's health is historically and widely known to be chronically underfunded and under-researched and not understood or funded in the same way. So it just simply hasn't had the attention, and I think that there's an awful lot around these issues, which obviously that's sort of part of a much bigger conversation. But at the same time, a lot of these issues are regarded as just part of being a woman, that that's
Yeah,
just stuff you.
it's like the cross you have to bear, sort
Exactly.
of. Oh, you know, sort of. Yeah, like I mean, we've done a few shows with experts in the menopause space, and what you're saying is sort of reminds me of what they were saying about how, oh, well, you know, it was just sort of expected that women would have hot flushes and that they would deal with it and sort of, you know, hopefully not talk too much and bother the men about it, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Is that how you feel? Is that how you would sort of you think it's similar with the pelvic floor issues?
It really is. And these are icky issues. These are not issues that we want to talk to, that are generally talked about. They're certainly not issues that you want to talk to your boss about, like I'm sure you discussed with regards a lot of menopause stuff. We're talking about, prolapse symptoms. So to describe what that might feel like, it kind of feels like something's falling out of you. It's uncomfortable. It makes
Because
sex
like
uncomfortable.
that
It
is
makes
kind of what it
movement.
is, right? Something
Exactly.
it, that's,
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
And depending on your grade of prolapse, I sort of do that steps because that's how we grade prolapse. So a grade one prolapse is often asymptomatic. Like a woman might not even know she's dealing with it, apart from maybe throughout her cycle, that might change.
Is this a bladder prolapse or a cervical prolapse or?
Whichever any type of pelvic organ prolapse, essentially
Okay.
what you're talking about is organs within the pelvis that have descended from where they're supposed to be,
Okay.
and they're impeding on other organs, and at the point of a grade four, for example, actually protruding out of the body. So obviously that's going to cause comfort issues around intimacy, around going to the bathroom, about all of that, but also about just general movement. So there's so many associated issues with these things, which, and they're just not talked about. These are not conversations you're going to have with your boss and say, look, I can't go on that social event because. So sadly, like a lot of women's health, but it just kind of does get swept under the carpet if talked about at all.
Can we take a slight a slight digression into what is the process? What is happening in a woman's body that causes a prolapse or otherwise causes the issues or damages the pelvic floor? Like, I feel like we're, like I said, as a ba let's go right back to basics so we all understand. I'm speaking as much for myself as for the listeners.
For sure. Well, there isn't one cause, but
Okay.
essentially what we're talking about is intra-abdominal pressure that is not contained optimally. So our core muscles, if we take the our transverse and the layers outside of that, and the pelvic floor and the diaphragm at the top. So you've kind of got this canister, which is your core, diaphragm at the top, pelvic floor at the bottom, and all the abdominals around the side. Now, it is part One of that muscle system's jobs is to contain intra-abdominal pressure, to give us stability, to give us strength, to keep us stable and able to move and lift. Now, there are various things that are going to interfere with that or compromise that. So one is pelvic floor damage, for example. So there is a weakness in that under that bottom layer, if you like, that sling that is supposed to contain everything at the bottom. So in terms of literally contain, so for leaks, but also sort of containing that pressure generally. There's also diastasis recti, which is abdominal separation of the rectus at the front. So that's another place, if you like, that compromise of that stability can occur. So, and any kind of hernia, maybe an umbilical hernia around the belly button, which is again common during pregnancy. Again, another source of instability, if you like. When I'm explaining it to a client, I might describe it as, for example, a hose that's got kinked. So if you've got a hose, yeah, and the water's running smoothly through it, then everything works. But when that's kinked, so we're also talking here about alignment or posture, if you like, which is the way that obviously posture and alignment changes throughout pregnancy, in terms of carrying the load, literally. And then very often our alignment in everyday movement is not optimal, whether that be when we're sitting on the toilet going to the bathroom, or whether that be when we're lifting or bending, all of which there are, when you've got a newborn, for example, endless, endless, endless lifting Yeah, so there's
Yeah.
breastfeeding, uncomfortable positions, stuck in positions, all of these kinds of things. So alignment is a big part of what we do at Mutu as well, which is about kind of unkinking that hose, if you like. But to what causes the problems is pressure. So it's an example I could give you, a kind of visual, if you like, which is why doing sit-ups post baby would not be a great idea. And if you imagine doing a sit-up, and if you imagine kind of the actual physical movement, especially when, sort of military style, your feet are jammed under something or something's holding onto your feet. Yeah, there's that kind of heave up. Now, actually, what's going on there is it's all lower back and hip flexors. The abs aren't really getting to do much. But anyway, but what they do is force pressure down.
Yeah, it's a compression.
So exactly. And if we have compromise in the musculature and the function of the pelvic floor, then you're forcing down. So it's tube of toothpaste is another visual. Hold it upside down. If the lid is not screwed on,
And
that's
how
it.
much of this, because what you're saying now is it's to, I mean, I don't know, you might tell me different, but doesn't strike me as particularly crazy, right? Like as in it is sort of common sense when you hear it like that. But when you were starting the Mutu system and you were talking to people about this, did people react like you were like a crazy person, or because it doesn't sound like it sounds logical. Do you see what I'm trying to get at? Maybe I'm not explaining
I
myself
do.
particularly well.
I do see what you're saying, and I think that's why I use lots of sort of visual comparisons and analogies to explain it, because it's sort of when a lot of women worry about diastasis recti, for example, the abdominal separation, because they
That's
don't like
what
the way
I
it
remember. I
makes their
saw
tummy look.
an interview with is it Denise Lewis? And she that was one of the things that she was. She didn't use the word horrified, but she I think she was very keen on the fact that she had a six pack, and then when she got pregnant, the six pack moved apart, you know?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So that's incredibly common. I mean, by the third trimester of pregnancy, every pregnant woman's got a diastasis, because your body's making room, right? But it's about that musculature coming back together again afterwards. And there's a lot online about diastasis, and it's often kind of quite scary to read. It sounds like your body's broken, like something's torn or ripped or something. That's not the case. But a sort of a lack of the right recovery and rehabilitative exercise afterwards, especially if you're doing the wrong, I don't like to say the wrong exercises, but if you're doing kind of sit-ups, planks, pull-ups, things that are putting huge amounts of pressure and strain on those systems before they've recovered, then you're going to make these problems worse. So yeah, diastasis, abdominal separation, because if even if you take the functionality out of it, a lot of women just don't like the way their tummy looks because of that. So it's kind of that's a very common reason for women coming into exercise. They wouldn't necessarily understand what's gone on. But like you say, when you actually explain, okay, when you do a sit-up and you've got a diastasis, you're just opening that gap up every time you do it. And when you visualize that, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
But did when you started and you were going out, because obviously when you started, you weren't clinically validated
For
or
sure.
anything, and you were a physio, but not an NHS physio or a
No,
physio. No,
not
you
a
were a
physio,
PT. You were a
fitness. Oh,
PT.
yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
you were a physical personal trainer,
Yes,
sorry.
yes.
Obviously nothing to do with the NHS. And so like how did you go about when you were what was the first reaction from the NHS, whoever you interacted with, and how did you go about sort of proving or validating this such that we end up in this current situation where you're working transatlantically and are the leader in the space?
To be honest, any kind of engagement with the NHS was a decade down the line. So in terms of how did I do that, at first it was through proof of fit, proof of evidence from
Private.
literally, yeah, actual women doing it, reviewing it, and giving us feedback.
Interesting.
So we've Mutu is not a venture-backed company. We're bootstrapped, always have been. So it's from the beginning, we have just I put stuff out there first to medics to say, like I say, is this safe? Is this okay? And then we tried it. And then this was with customers online, but also I've trained lots of many trainers over the years to actually use these methods and give these explanations. So it's through actual proving that it works with real women, hundreds of thousands of them over a decade or more, and then going. So it wasn't until then that I kind of moved from the purely direct consumer route to talking to health systems and sort of then seeking that more formalized evidence.
And how did you find, how was the kind of reaction from, I mean, I imagine, I mean, I've been on your website. I know I've read the Trustpilot reviews. They're all hugely, hugely positive. So I kind of think I know the answer to this, but just generally, what was the sort of reaction of those women that you worked with over that sort of 8 to 10 year period? I mean, obviously it was positive, but was there anything more nuanced than just positive?
Yeah, the reaction is, why did nobody tell me this before? The reaction is, I have always been led to believe, and I've always believed, that this is just what happens. It's normal. My mum said it was normal. My sister said it's normal. The magazine said it was normal. So it's very much, the reaction is, why the heck has nobody told me this before? And a real feeling of, this word is thrown around a lot, but empowerment, in terms of, okay, now I get it. Now I understand what's happened, because so many women throughout their lives, their pelvic health generally, and certainly, through the birthing process, is often very detached, because sort of intervention is needed or whatever. And so there is a process by which, even if women were in touch with, if you like, their bodies and what it needed and how it moved before, through the birthing process, can ironically actually sometimes make that worse, not better. So the reaction is one of, okay, I get it now, I understand. And another interesting reaction was that when I first made this, sort of more than 10 years ago, I in my head I was making an exercise program.
Right,
Over
because
the years, what we've
you had a background as a
for
personal
sure.
trainer.
For sure. And so sort of thought of it in that sense, as workouts, as exercises, as techniques. But actually, over the years, the feedback that we've gotten, I can remember being in the States one time doing a workshop, and a woman came up to me and she said, "You've saved my marriage." It's like, excuse me,
Oh, wow.
you're welcome, but
Yeah,
whatever,
I'll take it,
what
but
on earth?
what?
Yeah, exactly. But what?
Say what?
And it's because it's literally, it's what I sort of alluded to earlier, which is, these issues are intimate. They affect our intimate lives, our sex lives, as well as how we move and operate and go to the bathroom every day. It's everything. So this is not a musculoskeletal issue where it's like, oh, my arm hurts, I need some rehab. This is affecting everything. This is affecting how we feel about ourselves, our self-esteem, our
It
relationships.
reminds me, the
So
way
I
that
think that was.
listening to how you talk is really similar to how the menopause specialists who we've had at various times on the show talk about that. You know, it impacts every aspect of a woman's life. It impacts their mental health. It impacts their marriage. It impacts their job. Impacts their social life. And you know, up until really, and this leads me on to my next question. I mean, again, obviously, you know, quite clearly, I'm not sort of target market for the menopause. Unlikely to go through it, you know. So I'm kind of observing it from outside the glass, if that makes sense, or sort of one step removed from the women in my life. But it struck me that the Davina effect with menopause completely changed the kind of concept around or the perception of it and the not even the awareness of it, because obviously I wouldn't. Awareness is silly because every woman's aware of the menopause, right? You know what I mean? So more like it felt like it to that point. It made it the discussion much more transparent and open and present in day-to-day life, such to the extent that there was a huge boom in menopause-focused businesses, menopause health businesses dealing with corporations and insurers and all of these other things. Has something like that happened for pelvic floor, or could something like that happen for pelvic floor, or if not, why not? You know, what are the differences? Just curious what you think. What's the Davina moment for the pelvic floor?
I would love it too, is the answer to that. I mean, that would be great. I think you're right. And when you say, you said that, well, every woman was aware of the menopause, but actually there's such a gaslighting, if you like, of, well, you're just being moody, you're just being this, you're just, so. And
Right.
I'm sure you've had those discussions around menopause, which is that those symptoms are not really discussed properly, in terms of, they're not given the respect, if you like, for being as valid and as real as they are. And I think that is very much the case too around pelvic health. It's There is more talk, and as you say, the Davina effect has certainly meant that there is a huge, huge uptick in conversation, and about women understanding a little bit more about what might be available to them. So yeah, bring it,
Well, and
Davina.
I would, again, obviously, I don't want to sort of be that guy that says what he thinks is happening, but I would suspect that it's probably to use the analogy that you used earlier, where, you know, women might find it very difficult slash impossible to have a conversation with their boss about a pelvic floor issue. I wonder whether that's shifted now around the menopause, and then more comfortable saying, look, I can't do this, or I'm taking time off or whatever because of the menopause. And it's sort of like, we need the pelvic floor discussion to get to that same point.
It's shifted a little bit for sure. And I think, you know, that the downside to that sort of in the employee wellness space is that very often there tends to be a lip service or a checkbox angle to it, which sort of tends to mean, well, hey, we got somebody in to do a workshop on menopause and we open the windows. So, you know, we turn the temperature down a bit, you know. So
I mean, I'm laughing in a kind of cynical acceptance of knowing exactly what you're saying has definitively happened across the country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like
menopause
awareness day, and then like, you know, there's like heart-shaped balloons in the lobby, you know what I mean, and like we brand up the cafeteria pink, and then there's nothing else. I totally
exactly
can see that happening.
Exactly. And then coupled with that, you've got sort of a social media feed full of plenty of good stuff, but also plenty of wellness grifters selling you everything under the sun that you probably need now that you're in menopause. So
let's talk about that, because you have a great social platform, the Mutu platform. It's got like 7,500 followers, which is awesome. And you got some videos up there with like 30,000 views and stuff like that, which is great. But 10 years ago, that didn't really exist. I'm guessing you weren't into the socials 10 years ago.
They were just different. So it was, everything was Twitter then. So we used to do quite a lot on Twitter, because back then, sort of obviously Instagram didn't exist, the phrase influencer didn't exist, so there were the mummy bloggers, as they were known then. It was a different conversation with different people.
And what's your relationship with like the big aggregator in the space, like Mumsnet? What's your view on that? Because there must be a ton of threads and sub threads and chit chat about this issue on there. So what's your take on that?
I've always been a little bit scared of Mumsnet, but but I do know that Mutu is mentioned on there a few times, and I kind of go in. I don't contribute because they have very strict policies around that, which is completely fine with me.
Yeah.
But from what I gather, the conversations about Mutu and things like that on Mumsnet are positive. So I kind of just
That's really good. And to the point around the social media, so I guess particularly when we say social, I guess now we're talking about Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah.
What are the good bits and the bad bits around pelvic floor care or health or awareness for women with the socials?
The good bits are the conversation is happening. The good bits are it's being talked about. You've got women on all of those channels openly talking and discussing how they're dealing with these issues and saying, this is happening to me. And you might get somebody coming on, go, oh my God, this just happened. You know, I was at my kid's party and blah, blah, blah. And I peed myself. And so these conversations are happening. Again, that comes back to that validation piece that's so, so important, so that women don't feel that they're on their own on this, because they're not. That's the good stuff. And the good stuff is that we can get education out there, even on the most basic level of what does it even mean to do a pelvic floor exercise? How should it feel? What is it? You know, how do you breathe while you're doing it?
Yep.
All that. That's the good stuff. The downside, of course, is the, you know, the grifters, as I'd say, which is an awful lot of meno washing or fem washing. And what I mean by that is simply sort of taking anything from a herbal supplement to a food item to an exercise or whatever it might be, and saying this is very specifically tailored to you in this life stage, and it's pink and it's three times the price of the pink one that the guys are buying. That's the downside. So the misinformation, I guess, is the obvious downside.
So in the research for the show, I came across, I just want to, I'll tell you what the real was, and you can say whether you think this is a good or bad thing for the conversation. Okay.
Okay.
So it's a channel. I can't remember the name, which I think is probably helpful. But it was two women probably in their late 40s to 50s, and The channel was two is about the two women, and they were going to do a challenge around how long that you can jump on a trampoline for without weeing yourself. So is that like good or not good, or kind of for the discussion, do you think, in the space?
I know the one you mean,
Right.
and
Oh, okay, great. You know the one I'm talking about.
I do. And I would say that it comes back to that it's only going halfway. So we're talking about peeing yourself when you jump or laugh or sneeze. Great. You're not on your own. We've got it too. Don't you feel better? Because us two sort of B-list celebrity women, we have this issue too. Great. But what the problem is when that is just either backed up by some kind of backing from a pad company, if you like, where as if that's the only
Because
solution,
they
which
don't
is
want to
often.
actually solve it. They just want you to buy the pad, kind of,
Do you know,
to
I'm not sure. I've done some partnership work with some of those with some of those major companies, and I wouldn't say they don't want to solve the problem. That wouldn't be fair. But at the same time, if all you're offering to woman to a woman is this is the band-aid for you, like if you like, for this issue, and without then going on to say, and there is something you can do about it. So I just feel like these conversations are great as a starting point, but there is a flow
There's a
to this
so what.
conversation. Yeah.
There's a
So
so
what?
what that's
Yeah.
missing.
Yeah.
It's like,
Exactly. There
okay,
really
cool,
is.
you're highlighting this issue, but how are you actually helping women that are watching it?
And it's so missing a trick because that's the perfect scenario to go try
Yeah,
this
I bet
exercise. Simple
I
as
mean
that.
I, those two guys had pretty good reach. I
Yeah.
can't remember how many views that reel had, but I think it was pretty good. Anyway, we are going to go for our final commercial break of this show with Wendy Powell, the CEO and founder of Mutu System, which aims to help improve women's pelvic floor through digital sport. We'll be right back after this short break.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the last part of today's show with my guest, Wendy Powell, who is the CEO of Mutu System, or the Mutu System. So, what I'd love to talk about now is how did the US kind of come to pass? Because that's often seen as a very scary, very big move for anyone from the UK health ecosystem. So, how did that come to pass? And particularly because you said the care for women there was just almost non-existent.
Yeah, it's so it came about first, actually. So when I first started with Mutu System, putting my videos out there, as I said, and sort of asking clinicians around the world, like, is this safe? Does this work? My first it was one of those, like, you put a blog out there into the ether and it's tumbleweed and you hope somebody starts reading it, right? It was just started from scratch in that way. And my first readers and then my first purchasers were in the States. Now, and so it kind of was an organic process in that sense. It was kind of self-fulfilling. So I then did, so in the early days, a lot of my I would go, my husband's American, so I'm very sort of back and forth in that world anyway. So it's my first workshops were in the States. A lot of my PR at the beginning was in the States. So it was literally a direct-to-consumer organic self-fulfilling process, which is how we started there. So initially, my consumers were pretty much all American, and I think I have often been asked the question, and it's To be honest, I think there is a large element, especially if we say, this was sort of best part of 10 years ago as well, in that there is a different propensity, may have changed a bit now, but a different propensity in the States where there is an expectation that healthcare is paid for. So consumers in the States are obviously used to paying for something. Now, going to get something from their OBGYN around pelvic health might be unthinkable to many, but $99 online is more than feasible. So it's
Sure.
kind of, I think that there's literally just that familiarity and that comfort, or there was then, with sourcing your own information, doing your own research and finding it. So I think, that was instrumental in Mutu's growth at the beginning.
Okay. And how have you worked and migrated into the kind of insurer payer space as opposed to the D2C space?
So that is a process we're in now. So
Right.
we are in quite advanced talks with one of the major insurers now. So what that looks like, I don't know yet. But it's we're having conversations around the
But
employee benefit space, around the provided directed from the clinicians.
that's because they recognize the value, I guess,
Correct.
the return,
Yes.
without wishing to be too crude, there must be some kind of return, if you
Oh,
like,
it's
on
it, oh
them.
yeah. And when you're talking to in the States, obviously it's totally crude and bottom line. That's all we're interested in. So it's yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is the return in terms of the saved costs. So this is the same conversation, but obviously just differently, a different narrative, if you like, with the NHS. But the costs that you are saving down the line is the primary and secondary care around GP visits and physio, but also further down the line, when it gets more serious, surgical intervention, which is very expensive, not only expensive, but actually pretty controversial. Mesh surgery, etc., is,
Yes.
that's not a
Oh, so
that's.
is the mesh surgery, is that to do with the, obviously I knew the location in the body,
Yeah.
obviously. Vaginal mesh kind of gives it away a little bit. But the it was that is that was that always addressing a pelvic floor issue in the same sense that we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Urinary incontinence and/or pelvic organ prolapse—they are treated with surgically with mesh, or have been. Yeah.
And that's is
So
that still what
those
happened?
are the costs that you're saving, preventing, if you like.
And what's the controversy been about the mesh? Just remind me and remind everyone listening.
Yeah. There's been a lot of controversy over mesh surgery, and I'm not an expert on the exact makeup of the product, if you like, but essentially what has happened over the years is that a lot of women have had this surgery and the mesh literally enmeshes itself into your organs and into your tissues and causes immense and chronic pain that then can't
Oh,
be removed. So there's some
wow.
real, yeah, it's horrible. There are some there's been massive compensation cases in the
Wow.
States, and yeah, it's messy. It causes huge chronic pain and discomfort. It's not easily remedied. You can't just take it out because it's kind of grown
Because
into the
it's
body. That
embedded.
that's the issue. Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, I can see why the payers in the US are up for a discussion around something upstream that can prevent that.
Yeah. It's about the primary and secondary care, so the visits with regards to incontinence, etc. But it's also the related ones, whether it be mental health, depression meds around postpartum depression, that kind of thing. So
Right.
there's many kind of, the when we our initial work, our work with the NHS contract, obviously there was an economic evaluation, and the positive outcome that we had from that, i.e., showing that using Mutu saved money, only looked at two symptoms. So it looked at incontinence and prolapse, and the reason it only looked at those two was because those are the only ones there's actually any figures on for what is spent
Yeah,
now. Because
because I
obviously
yeah, health economic
when you're
exam
making a
health
case, yeah.
the issue with it, we've done the same thing at PocDoc, and our health economic analysis was great, but you have to compare it to something that the system's already paying for.
Exactly.
It doesn't, so if the system isn't paying for anything to the, then you can't compare. So for example, I suspect what you're kind of getting at is like in the NHS, there's absolutely no data on mental health treatments associated with female incontinence. So you can't compare that to determine a cost saving.
Absolutely, absolutely. And on top of that, you've also got added problems with this. I believe that, and I think this is a US statistic, but that the average time that it takes a woman to present to her doctor with incontinence issues is 7 years. So it's kind of what you've, yeah. So again, this comes back to these symptoms that women just live with because they think that they kind of have to and should. So that again makes economic evaluation hard because that's just not in the data.
There's too,
so
the period of time has gone, is too long.
Yeah.
So on that topic of timing, like, what is the ideal point at which someone could start or should start the Mutu system?
I often say that if the first time you're trying to find your pelvic floor is after you've just pushed a baby out of it, there was an ideal time before that. So the ideal time is pregnancy or pre-pregnancy, I would say. So I strongly believe that pelvic floor health is something that our teenage girls should know about. They should know what's down there, how it works, and how to keep it strong and functional. Because so much around pelvic floor exercises, we hear the phrases do your Kegels, or related, we might hear engage your core. Well, that's all very well, but what does that mean? What's it supposed to feel like? What does it feel like when I engage my core or do my Kegels right, or when I do them wrong? And so that's sort of what we do, which is to really sort of back up away from the Pilates class, if you like, to come back to the foundations. So the ideal time is, I would say, pregnancy or pre-pregnancy, but anytime. To be honest, it's never too late. That's probably the thing we're asked the most. I had my kids ages ago. Am I too late? No, it's a muscle. You can work on it. Yeah.
And as a sort of personal trainer that kind of went off and, or like you say, organically slash accidentally, maybe started a sort of worldwide health movement slash company, what have been the biggest things that have surprised you around that journey?
The surprises have been, I think that the early lovely surprises were around, wow, I thought I was just making an exercise program, and women are talking to me about everything from their intimate relationships through to their self-esteem at work, you know. So I think that just really realizing what a bigger issue this was. And then the other one has been over the last few years of again, as I said, the where this came from was me postnatal, postpartum, but realizing over the years that, okay, this is not a new mom issue. This is a woman issue. This is a female body issue. So this is throughout her life cycle. So because so often I would be being asked like, oh, am I too late? I had my babies ages ago, or I've never had babies, or, oh my gosh, I was fine after my babies, but now I'm in my 50s and what the heck, you know? So it was that surprise, which is that what started as a postpartum thing is not a postpartum thing. It's a our body thing.
I think that's really powerful. And has anyone actually tried to sort of disagree with you in any kind of material way? I mean, is there really like a counter argument to this anywhere? You know,
not really that we should look after our pelvic floor.
Y- you get what, you know, healthcare systems are not always the easiest to change, you know, and there's often individuals in those systems that for whatever reason decide to disagree with anything that looks like progress sometimes. But you've not encountered that really.
Well, it would either be, I'm not going to say for a second there's no resistance, because obviously, you know, we've got one NHS contract after more than 10 years. So you know, clearly that's not an easy ride. But I think probably the biggest resistance from a clinician point of view might be we've already got that covered. You know, well, we offer physio or we have surgery, but yeah, we know that that's not really the case.
I mean, there's a difference between saying you've got it covered and it being available and easy to access for every woman.
Exactly. And then what we might hear too is you know, there's often a surprise at the sheer prevalence of the issue, you know, that because so many of these symptoms and these circumstances simply go unpresented and unreported because for a million reasons. I mean, think it's normal, they're embarrassed, don't want to talk about this thing. You know, there's so many accessibility issues in there around culture, around religion, around language, about so many things that will affect how easily a woman is going to present at her GP and say, this is happening to me, what can I do? So there's a lot of resistance and there's a lot of challenges and you know, sort of obstacles to come up against for sure. But in terms of should this be happening, I think that'd be a tough case to make to say that it shouldn't.
Well, yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'd be pretty dismayed if someone was, you know, was trying to pretend that this wasn't an issue. So if someone's listening and they've got these issues or they're worried, where do they go to find out about Mutu?
Mutu system is MUTU, mutusystem.com. Any social platform, on the internet. Yep, Mutu System is where you'll find us. We do offer a 10-day free trial on our app, so you can literally come in, take a look around, obligation free,
And so
and ask any questions you like. There's no such thing as TMI in my world, Steve, as you can probably imagine. So whatever questions women have, just ask them.
And is there an element where the community helps the community on the on your
Yeah.
platforms?
There's a community within our membership site, yes. So we used to be a Facebook group many moons ago, and we moved off that and brought it into the membership site. So it's focused, it's private, and there our members can support each other as well as ask myself and my team questions as well.
Awesome. And so in the final minute, I think we've got a minute left, 2 minutes. I always ask the guest who comes on the show, during the times, which I'm sure there have been many difficult times, either before you started your business or during starting your business, what's the mantra that you go to, or your motto that you used and kind of refer to get you through some of those difficult times that you want to share with people?
I would say, from a business point of view, and having gone through that process and still going through that process of are we talking directly to consumers? Are we talking to healthcare systems? Are we talking to national ones, private ones? Is the importance of, and I've learned this the hard way, of understand the challenges and the language of the people to whom you're speaking, because I think this is a really big thing. And I mentor some femtech startups, and so often there's this frustration of they just don't get it, they're not hearing it. And it's, I always say, look, if you're repeating yourself and getting frustrated that they don't get it, you need to stop, ask questions and listen, because the challenges that the people on the other side are dealing with, you're not addressing. So, and that's probably something that, having worked with NHS, US and consumers, they are three entirely different conversations. And the way that I describe the problem and the solution, depending on who I'm speaking to, is something that I've learned very much needs to be adaptable.
Brilliant. Great place to end. Wendy Powell from the Mutu System Digital Pelvic Floor Support, thank you so much for coming on the show.
So welcome. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week with another show.